Welcome to St. Mark's Cathedral Conversations, a podcast featuring members of the St. Mark's Cathedral community in Seattle, Washington. These interviews feature lives of faith and adventure, service and connection. Here's our host, Michael Pereira.
Hello, and thank you for listening to St. Mark's Cathedral Conversations. The following interview with Malcolm McLaurin was recorded on June 14th before his departure for seminary. We're here with Malcolm McLaurin, who has done so many things over such a long period of time at St. Mark's. And unfortunately, some of those things are going to come to an end. But we're still going to celebrate Malcolm's time and his influence here at St. Mark's with a conversation about how this all started, where he came from, what this means to him, and where he's going from this. Malcolm McLaurin, welcome to Cathedral Conversations.
Oh, thank you. Glad to be here.
Tell us a little bit about you. Tell us where you come from. Tell us how you came to Seattle and how the St. Mark's thing got started.
Yeah, so I was born and raised in this area. I was actually baptized right down the street at First AME back in 1978. You can edit that out because I'm getting old. Born to a couple from Jackson, Mississippi. They came here on vacation and called home and said, sell our stuff, we're not going back. And lived here until I was nine, where my parents had got a divorce, and we moved back to Jackson with my mom. Mm-hmm. So I am one of the few that can say that I'm a native Seattleite, although I spent the bulk of my life down south in Arkansas and in Jackson, Mississippi. There's always been a deep connection there. After my parents got divorced, my dad lived here ever since. He still lives in Everett. Like I said, grew up in Jackson at a small Methodist church. Lived with my mom and my older brother. We were at church every Sunday morning. A lot of music. We had an incredible gospel choir, which was our home choir at Anderson United Methodist. We grew up Sunday mornings is what we did. We went to church and we dressed up in our ugly bow ties and cheap suits. And
so nothing's changed.
Nothing's changed. Well, my weight. But roughly in high school, I started dating a girl, and she invited me to her youth group. And it was at a small Renegade Baptist church, a church that got kicked out of the Southern Baptist Convention for a number of reasons. But they were kind of an Episco Baptist church, as we look back. And attended that youth group in high school, and out of high school, unfortunate turns of events. I didn't get the football scholarship I wanted to, and which made college not totally accessible. So I was taking a couple of years to figure out what I was doing next. Mm-hmm. And this youth director that I'd been going to his youth group since 10th or 11th grade called me and said, I was looking for an assistant youth director, and you came up in my prayers. And I wasn't doing anything else. And I said, okay. And that was my start into youth ministry. And I did that right out of high school for 2 years. And from there, there was a church in Little Rock that was looking for a youth minister. And it was an Episcopal church. And they interviewed me. I was 20 years old. I was down in Oxford, Mississippi, getting ready to try out for the football team. 20 years old. There's no way I was going to get a job at this Episcopal church at the cathedral. But I said, I'll go for the interview. I went, and I got the job. And a week later, I moved to Little Rock to start my first full-time job in youth ministry. And a week later, I had my 21st birthday.
Wow.
And I've been doing youth ministry in some form or fashion ever since.
What makes youth ministry special for you?
I find it incredibly sacred to be invited into people's lives. What I love about youth ministry is I love being able to share. I love being able to share to youth that they are fully worthy of God's love in a time of their life where everything else may seem, you know, confusing, and as the prayer for youth says, unsteady, that I get to remind them that they are, no matter what's happening, they are worthy of God's love. Because that's a message that I wanted to hear. And it's a message that I heard through many different people in my life. And so much of youth ministry for me is being able to give that back. And to know that they have someone on staff at the church whose primary job is to pray for them, to be in their corner, and to be their advocate. And I model a lot of my work on praying for the youth, being their advocate, and knowing that they have somebody, hopefully somebody who's well-adjusted and mature, that they can go to when they're needing something, needing somebody.
That's got to make a huge difference in their lives.
I hope so. It's been my honor to do it. And, I hope I've, been a positive impact on some of the youth, or all the youth. I know they have been on mine, so.
You told us about how you got to Little Rock, and then how did the connection to Seattle come up?
Yeah, well, if you didn't know, there's a little bit of Arkansas connections to the Diocese of Olympia, and an Arkansas connection to St. Mark's. So Dean Steve was the senior warden, maybe the junior warden, of the first church where I started youth ministry in Little Rock. I knew him through that. And then the place where I was doing youth ministry was also a place that Bishop Rickle did youth ministry before. So that, I think there was maybe two youth directors between us. So there was always already a connection, because people always wanted to compare me to this guy I'd never met named Greg Rickle. Greg Rickle, when he was youth minister, he did this. And he happened to be a priest in a neighboring town in Little Rock. But I've had a connection to both the dean and Bishop Rickle. And they knew my work, and I knew their work, and it seemed like a good fit. Hmm. On top of that, when the opportunity came up, it came at a time when I was ready to move back south. We were living in California, working at a camp and a retreat center. And I knew I was longing to be back into youth ministry on a parish level. And the opportunity came up, and it seemed like a made-for-TV story. You move away from your hometown. I never thought I'd ever be back in Seattle.
Yeah. Your life just went in different places.
Yeah. I that was a chapter of my life. That chapter's not coming back. But then this, in a weird roundabout way, it did come back. Seattle was another opportunity, which gave me an opportunity to rekindle a relationship with my dad, one that was rocky from the time we moved away up until the birth of my first child. So it gave me an opportunity to say, okay, here's some relationships that can be rebuilt. Gave me an opportunity to work with Steve again, the dean again, someone who's been instrumental in my life in many, many different ways. And it just seemed right. I can look back 4 years ago, past 4 years, and say it was right. It was the right decision to make.
And your return to Seattle, did that connect you directly with St. Mark's?
Yes. So my return to Seattle was to come and work at St. Mark's as the youth director and the youth and young adult director.
What did you know about St. Mark's before you started that gig?
Well, I came to visit probably a year or so before. And this actually connects to me why this is also the reason why I was really excited about working at St. Mark's. I have a little bit of a problem with the Episcopal Church's signs, "You are welcome here," for many reasons. One, sometimes they seem a little arrogant. And two, so many churches say that, but they don't practice what they preach, you know. And when I came to St. Mark's, the first thing I noticed was a prayer book in Braille. And to me, that was the symbol of, oh yes, this place is trying to make it welcome to all people, even someone who's blind and has an opportunity to use a prayer book. And that that just spoke volumes to me. And in the space, this awkward, big old concrete box, I just found it amazing. And there was something deeply moving in the space, from the acoustics to the simplicity of a concrete box. And it was just a place I really felt deeply called to be.
How has St. Mark's changed you in the time that you've been here?
That's a great question. It's interesting. So my background in ministry was mainly in Arkansas and Mississippi, in a place that is a very church-first culture. I like to say that the question down south is not if you go to church, it's where you go to church. that people know on Sunday mornings, Sunday evenings, Wednesday nights, most people are in a church somewhere. Sports teams don't plan practices on Wednesday night or Sunday mornings or Sunday nights, because it's a very church first culture. So talking church, it could be a normal conversation in Arkansas or Mississippi. It became very apparent really quickly was that Seattle is not a church first culture. when you would tell people that, you know, you work for a church, or, you know, you do youth ministry or whatnot, they look at you like, oh, people still do that? So the question is not where you go to church, it's if you go to church. And so that has been an incredible growing edge, is how to have a conversation of church when there's already some resistance. How can I talk about my spirituality in a place that those conversations don't naturally come up? While I'm here, I could talk about my therapist. I could talk about where I take yoga, talk about the spirituality of yoga, all those things. But when you start talking about Christianity and faith and going to church, there's usually a block, and people are either really intrigued or are ready to end the conversation. So how do I proclaim the gospel? How do I proclaim the good news in a place that using that language automatically stops the conversation? It's been interesting.
I love how you compared your experiences growing up in Arkansas, where, like you said, the idea of, I mean, not even going to church once a week, but even twice, you know, for Wednesday night programs and then Sunday morning, that's just a part of life. Whereas I'm sure living in Seattle, we've all experienced that awkward pause in the conversation when you say, I'm booked on Sunday mornings because I had to be at church, and everybody goes, oh, okay. People still do that.
Or even have to ask yourself that question when somebody's like, what are you doing Sunday morning? What are they even to say, oh, I'll be at church? Or to say, oh, I've got a prior engagement.
For everything that you've seen, for all the different experiences that you've had, why does St. Mark's still tick for you?
A couple of reasons, or maybe three reasons. One is, I would say, it's rich history when it comes to music. We do music incredibly well, and we take it seriously. Everything from the Compline Choir to the children's music program. Music is something that is valued here, and music can also be a connector to the holy. When sometimes the words may bring people up short, or sometimes the words may have pain attached to them for people when it comes to Christianity, engaging in the music can be a hallway, can be a connector between where somebody is in their faith journey and what the church has to offer. So I think music is a big part of it. I think we do liturgy well. The liturgy being the scaffolding that create space for a sacred experience, and we take that serious here. Liturgy is not something that we we walk into haphazardly. We take liturgy very seriously. And I think also a history of doing justice work, of being out in the world and doing the work that doing the work of justice, showing up for people who are on the margins or oppressed, whether it's Noel House or now I work with refugees and whatnot. We strive to show up for marginalized communities.
Your next steps are kind of taking you away from St. Bronx. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so in 2 weeks, I will be moving, me and my family will be moving to Suwanee, Tennessee, to as I work on my Master's of Divinity to become a priest. So it'll be a 3-year program and of study, and we're really excited. Now, I'm glad to say that St. Mark's, I've started this process before, but I'm glad that this is the place that I'm doing it, as my sending parish. St. Mark's has been wonderful for me, and that I'm part of that journey. And my hope is that while at seminary, I can continue to explore a connection between social justice, reconciliation, and our call as Christians. I am really interested in the ways that our faith push us outside of our doors and to show up for the other, and do what we do on Sunday mornings, creating community, making music. How do we do the same thing at work or on the bus on the way to work, or like when we're walking through Pike Place and the people that we consider other? How does our faith impact us seeing the other as our brother and sister?
Why clergy, though? Because to be honest, what you've described is what we do, and we can do that in so many different roles and in so many different ways. What is it about clergy that calls you?
Oh, wow. So now you went deep. Again, that's a great question, and it's a hard question. It's a question that I ask myself. I've been asking myself for the past 15 years. As someone who really values lay ministry, I've been doing lay ministry in the church for 20 years, and it's been, and I really believe in the power of lay ministry. So why this next step? I don't know if I can say it. Yeah, the image that comes to mind for me when I think about this next step is having, the image I have is having 1 foot on the altar and 1 foot in pushing the community, myself including the community, out the doors. So my role would be through study and continue to study scripture, and through preaching and teaching, that we are to be able to support, encourage a congregation or a group of people, wherever that may be, to move from our pews and move from the altar out into the world. Because if we do it just in the church, then I think we failed. If the context of social justice only comes up on Sunday mornings, then I feel like we've failed, or we've fallen one step short. I feel like my job would be to push from the altar, not leaving the altar behind, mm-hmm. but it being our springboard of doing the work that we're called to do out in the world, outside the doors.
Just one more question. Right. I promise it's going to be an easier one. You really went all out with that last one. So much appreciated. So something to make it a little easier on you. Is there a moment or a memory or a story from your time at St. Mark's that influences how you remember this place? Is there something that when you think of St. Mark's, that memory comes up?
Wow, yeah. So I have lots of memories of inside jokes and funny things that I've done with the youth, and a lot of great memories of eating good food and breaking bread with the young adults. But the memory, what comes up for me at this part of my journey and so much of St. Mark's, what I've learned about myself this past year has been about finding my voice and trusting my voice. The memory that's coming to mind right now is probably 4 or 5 months ago, I was invited to be a part of a Wednesday night forum. And the forum was about sharing your experience, sharing your journey, but doing it in a creative way. And what most people don't know, actually they do now because there was some poetry in the rubric this last go round, is I've been writing poetry. I studied poetry at the University of Arkansas, and I've been writing poetry for the past 15 years, but I keep it to myself. When I was invited to be a part of this sharing your experience Wednesday night forum was, I think, the first time that I read some poetry in a public sphere. And St. Mark's being a place where I felt vulnerable enough to allow that to happen. And that grew me. I don't know how else to explain it. It was hard, but I knew I was around people who loved me, cared for me, wanted the best for me, I was in a safe place. So I leave St. Mark's knowing that when I return, I know where to go to find a safe space, a place where I'm valued, and a place where I'm heard. And for that, I'll be forever grateful.
Malcolm McLaurin, thank you very much for being a part of this.
Thank you, Michael.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. Our music was performed by Michael Kleinschmidt on the Flintrop organ at St. Mark's. Michael Pereira and Andrew Himes produced the podcast, and we hope you'll visit stmarks.org. So long.